Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, Podbean. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. If you want to advertise with us, you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any inquiries. If you have any questions for us to answer on the show, you can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls as well. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. And Cody, we didn't get a chance to get to this yesterday's show, but on Christmas morning, John Paxson went on the radio and said some stuff.
That's correct. Paxson was become basically an annual tradition, joined David Schuster on 670 The Score.
Which is the only Chicago sports radio station you should be listening to, by the way.
And it's the only spot you can find my writing at 670thescore.com. But yeah, it's kind of an annual tradition for Pax and Schuster. They go way back, just Shue covering the Bulls championship teams and the Bulls for so many years. Mm-hmm. And Pax being the organization as an assistant coach, as an announcer in the front office. And Shue hosts a lot on Christmas Day. During the holiday break and stuff. So Pax joins him, and I know some fans immediately think, oh, great time. He talks to the public late at night at 10 p.m. in mid-April after a bad season, and then Christmas morning when everyone's opening presents. But at the same time, it is an opportunity. That interview and those quotes still exist 2 days later,
They got a lot of circulation, I feel like, among Bulls fans. Obviously, I wrote a story about them on The Athletic. A lot of other outlets, the Tribune posted something. You know.
And the thing about Pax is he's very straightforward, and in a way that gives you a lot more because he doesn't put a spin on it like Gar Foreman does a lot of times in front of the microphone. And Pax kind of has a little, he can't keep his emotions in quite as well, I don't think, so just the tone and everything he says comes across. So I've always really been very interested in what he said, and I mean, probably the biggest thing he said is it was just nice that someone finally acknowledged the Bulls aren't athletic and they have to get more athletic if they want to progress as an organization, was the thing that stood out to me, because that's plagued this team for several years now, even going back to the end of the Tom Thibodeau era. In that regard, teams can just jump higher, run faster, slide their feet left and right more on defense to give the Bulls a lot of problems. Paxson, he admitted this as a problem, and that was probably what stood out the most to me. What did you make of that, Sean? And just in that regard, what Is it empty words in a way because they're not athletic enough, or do you view this as them changing course maybe this off season?
Well, it's a little bit of an ironic thing that he said that, because you know, right after they traded Derrick Rose and then also after they signed Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade, Gar, who was mostly the one that did the public appearances talking to media after a lot of those moves happened, was talking about how they wanted to get younger and more athletic, and he, you know, the point he kept hammering home was that they had 10 guys on the roster who were in their third year or less of experience in the league as a way of saying they got younger. But, you know, it's kind of funny that they're talking about wanting to get more athletic, and they need to get more athletic after, you know, they just drafted Denzel Valentine, who, it's not a secret that he's not the most athletic guy in the world. You know, his weakness, you know, when he was drafted in June, the scouting report on him was that he was a very smart player and a very mature player and very polished, but that the athleticism was kind of, you know, a weakness of his. And that was a scouting report that existed. It's not a surprise that that happened, and they still took him 14th overall in the draft.
Yeah,
Bobby Portis also is a guy who, you know, his athleticism wasn't really what was the draw when he was a draft prospect.
More of his skill set and ability to kind of rebound in college for Bobby Portis, but back to Denzel, like, that manifested itself defensively in college. It was no secret that Michigan State hit him on lesser offensive players when he had to be on the defensive end. And you do that sometimes in general anyway, with any superstar who's not a premier two-way player, just to have him conserve a little bit of energy for offense. But there are also a few questions about his knee, which his knee hasn't been a problem, but he did have, I believe when he was younger, an operation on his knee that some question, will that hinder him? And the consensus coming out of NBA Combine was no, but that was all on display, what he was on the national scene at college at Michigan State and also at the NBA Combine. So for the Bulls to take that direction, and I have to go back through the draft and look everyone up. I'm not in the mood here to redraft that, but in a way, yes, that's empty because they had a chance to start that different direction. But on draft night, you got to remember the Bulls had that internal debate and consternation. Are they going to trade Jimmy Butler and start the rebuild? And when they didn't, they felt Denzel Valentine would probably contribute sooner rather than maybe a younger guy who's a little bit more of an athlete who isn't as polished of a basketball player. So that stood out to me.
But the thing is, they're talking about, you know, drafting these guys that the draw of them, even if they don't have high upside, is that they can play right away. That was the talk with Denzel. That was the talk with Bobby Portis. And it's just like neither of those guys are in the rotation right now. Like that's a problem. When the reason that you drafted them or the reason that you sold them to fans was, you know, these guys are ready to contribute right now, and neither of them have really looked great when they have played, and they aren't playing regularly.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because Paxson said that you're good enough to make the playoffs a little bit, but you're picking between 14, 15, and 22. It's difficult to get impact players unless you're lucky like we were with Jimmy Butler, referencing 2011, years ago. We're started on that portion of it. And then he goes in the athleticism. 14, 15, 22, like I understand you're not going to get a superstar, but
unless you do, though.
You're talking guys that need to be in the rotation by now, like you just referenced. There's no reason for first, second, and third year guys who were picked 14, 15, 22, Doug McDermott, I believe, was 11 for them, to not have a bigger role than what they have right now for the Bulls.
Right, and I also just kind of feel like saying, oh, well, you know, we're not getting guys, you know, who are impact players because we had these draft positions. I don't know. I feel like that's just some excuses, because if you look at some other guys, like, there are no shortage of guys who were mid to late first round, not even counting like second round pick guys, yeah. Like, you know, guys like Draymond Green, who everybody missed on. That's not really a fair thing to hold against anybody. But, well, you know, you look at, you know, Giannis in 2013, Giannis Antetokounmpo was a 15th pick. Rudy Gobert that same year was the 27th pick. Larry Nance Jr. last year was the 27th pick. Rodney Hood, I believe, was the 23rd pick in Utah, and he's contributing. You can find guys, like, every year there are...
You just name guys that are premier athletes that are very good.
Right, guys that are, you know, maybe weren't sure things coming out of the draft. Nobody had any idea what Giannis was, but the Bucks took a chance on him because they saw the potential. And that, you know, instead of going for a kind of a safer pick, and obviously it's paid off for them. Sometimes you draft a monster athlete like, you know, Anthony Randolph or something like that, and it doesn't pan out. But you have to... I mean, I feel like the Bulls are kind of playing it too safe in terms of some of these draft picks. They're the guys they've drafted, if you look at the last few years, you know, Doug McDermott, Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine, these are all guys who were established college players, maybe didn't have super high ceilings, but you felt like you knew what they were going to be right away, and you're only going to get a certain thing. You took a swing on a guy like Jimmy Butler, who didn't really, you know, he wasn't a huge prospect coming out of college, but, you know, they saw the potential, they saw the work ethic, and look what he's turned into. I'm not saying that any guy that they draft that's a little bit more of a risk is going to become a multiple-time all-star and a franchise player like Jimmy Butler, but you have to take the gamble sometimes.
Jimmy's probably the best athlete they've drafted since 2011.
I would say so.
You mean he's more of an athlete than Teague or Tony Snell or the last three guys they drafted there? And that raises a bigger issue. You talked about the ceiling. Like, when do you go for the safer draft pick, and when do you swing for the fences a little bit more on a less certain prospect? Well, at the same time, devil's advocate here is that the Bulls have played it safe and haven't even had those recent prospects pan out anyway. But in the big picture, would it speak to the Bulls if they took more of a gamble on maybe younger guys in the draft, kind of taking a nod or sign toward rebuilding? And how good does the team on the floor have to be? I feel like they're at the point now, and they should have known this last year after that season when they missed the playoffs and Fred Hoiberg's rookie year last year. Like, it was the time to start taking more gambles. I totally understand the Doug McDermott pick because they really liked him. They were in they wanted a three-point shooter.
Except for the part where they traded five picks to get him.
Yes, that was a lot to pay. Two first-rounders and three second-rounders when it was all said and done. And that's the trade that ended up with Gary Harris and who was it?
Nurkic,
yep, in Denver that they took.
And those are both guys that were a little bit less of a sure thing, and they've both become rotation players in Denver.
That's very true. And, I mean, they have...
And this is by the way, Doug is the best of these guys that they've drafted in recent years. He's, you know, he's been inconsistent. He's had some health issues, but he's a steady rotation player. And when he gets into a rhythm, he at least has one elite skill, which is three-point shooting. These other guys, you know, Bobby Portis, Denzel, obviously Tony Snell's not on the team anymore. He never really did anything. Marcus Teague was out of the league in 2 years. These other guys they've drafted since Jimmy were kind of seen as safe picks, and then they still didn't really do anything.
They could have taken Rodney Hood in 2014. Easily. He went 23rd, and he's a guy that they were rumored at the time to have interest in.
Gorgui Dieng in 2013, when they took Tony Snell, he was a guy that I know a lot of people on the coaching staff were pushing for, and he's panned out better than Tony. I mean, he's not a great player, but he's better than Tony Snell has been.
He's a rotation player.
He's a rotation player.
And he would have helped a Bulls defense in the last couple of years.
He would help the Bulls right now.
Very poor on the interior once Joakim Noah got hurt.
Like, it gets,
Pau Gasol years.
It gets into this weird territory, because I don't like doing this whole thing of saying, oh, well, they took this guy when they could have taken this guy. And it's like, because, you know, every single draft you can go through it, you can go through and say, oh, well, this team took this guy who's not that good, and they could have taken this guy who's not that good. But, you know, it's more, it speaks to a bigger picture thing where it's a pattern that the Bulls keep taking these guys that are seen as just kind of safe bets to be contributors, and then they don't pan out, when maybe if they had taken a little bit more of a risk and tried to get someone younger, you know, somebody like Rodney Hood or Rudy Gobert or whoever, maybe, you know, that guy who has this explosive talent but isn't, you know, as much of a sure thing, you know, quote unquote, ends up panning out, and then you're in a better position.
Yeah, well, do you think Pac's comments hint at the Bulls changing course next year in the draft, saying we have to get more athletic?
I mean, you would think so, but they... I mean, they've been saying this for however many years, and it's just the same thing every year. And it should be noted, by the way, that as of now, obviously a lot can change, and there's, you know, nothing is certain. But right now, the Sacramento Kings are in the eighth seed in the Western Conference, and if their pick goes outside of the top 10, the Bulls get their pick. So there's a chance that the Bulls could have two picks in like the low to mid teens, because they'll have their own pick, obviously, and then they could have this Kings pick, which. It seems like, because that eighth seed in the West is, you know, Portland's really fallen off, and then, you know, you look at some of these other teams, you know, Denver, the New Orleans, the Lakers, there's no real sure thing, so there's a good chance that Sacramento could make the playoffs and the Bulls could get that pick.
Yeah, and I'm just looking here at the guys drafted after Denzel Valentine this past year, and no one's really stood out as being a difference maker yet, so this isn't to say, like,
it's too early to write off Denzel, but if you look at, I mean, go back to 2015.
I'll look that up in a second here. But, I mean, like, in 2016, Malcolm Brogdon might be the most productive so far that was taken behind Denzel Valentine.
And he's a guy who was in college for several years and was also would have been seen as kind of a safe pick.
That's an excellent point. So I don't know if the Bulls are going to change course or not, but here's the 2015 draft. I mean, what was standing out to you here at this point? Bobby Portis went 22 to the Bulls. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson,
the guy I think is showing more. Larry Nance Jr., number 27, he was a crazy athlete who people didn't really know what he'd be as an NBA player. He's looked pretty good so far with the Lakers.
Montrezl Harrell, he got some playing time in Tick, I think.
Now that Clint Capella's out, he's been playing a lot more.
Yeah, and I mean, the Bulls have picked up RJ Hunter since then after the Celtics got rid of him because they had a full roster.
And
so
he has barely played at all.
There's, I don't have problems per se with the last two picks, or there was someone else obvious, but it was the safe play, you know what I mean?
Right, and then the safe play hasn't even really panned out.
So, maybe look for the Bulls to change course. Gotta see how the rest of the season plays out there. Paxson was also asked about whether Dwayne Wade could attract other big-name free agents. I thought that was a good question, something that's on the minds of everyone, because he did sign that two-year deal, I believe, as a player option for year two.
I would imagine he's probably going to pick up the option because he's not going to get that kind of money from anyone
else.
Yeah,
and again, he likes being in Chicago. His family doesn't want to move every other year at this point in his career. And unless D-Wade's getting back together with Chris Paul and LeBron and the boys somewhere, like, he's probably more apt just to stay in Chicago.
Well, LeBron's got a two-year deal with the Cavs before his next opt-out, so he's not going to be leaving anywhere soon.
But Pax said in regards to Dwayne Wade possibly attracting other free agents, Chris Paul notably is going to be a free agent next year. He said, you can't count on that. I guess in your wildest dreams you hope something like that might happen, but if you're counting on me, that's not a plan. That's just hoping and wishing. That wasn't a consideration in signing D-Wade. He also spoke very highly of Dwayne Wade's impact, which I think everyone in the organization is cognizant of. But again, that doesn't hint too much at the Bulls' future, I guess, free agency plans, because I don't think they know him yet either, but they're kind of in a two-year window here, right, with the Rondo and Wade signing, and also decision up on Nico Mirotic, who we'll get here in a second, at the end of this season. Taj in the last year, his contract before becoming a free agent. They have to decide this offseason, well, they're kind of amid a window in a way, what moves forward.
Right, and I would imagine at this point, unless the season just completely goes off the rails, they're not going to do what they almost did last summer and trade Jimmy Butler. I just don't really see that happening at this point. He's so good, and the new CBA is going to make it so easy to keep him.
So advantageous.
Which we've talked about. But, you're going to have to make decisions on a lot of these guys, and are they going to try to go after one of the big free agents, you know, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, some of these guys that are available this summer? Are they going to go after one of those guys? Or are they going to kind of make smaller moves and just try to keep this group together, maybe even try to re-sign Taj if he's willing to take a little bit of a discount to come back, which I don't really see happening. Maybe re-sign Nico if he keeps playing like this. I don't know.
The point about Nico that you brought up, timely, because I thought this might have been the most revealing part of the interview from Paxson the other day. He was asked about Nico Mirotic and his lack of consistency, and he also made reference to Doug McDermott as well, needing to be more consistent. But in regards to Nico specifically, Pax said, I think sometimes players get, Nico has a tendency to get down on himself, to be honest with you. I think sometimes as a player, you just have to kind of say to yourself, enough is enough, I'm going to go out and I'm going to compete, I'm going to work on my game. Went on to say, Nico works hard, is a good guy, needs to shoot better than 30% from three-point range and such. But I thought those were fairly strong words about Nico. The strongest words anyone in the Bulls organization has offered last year or this year, I think, on Nico Mirotic.
Which I thought was interesting, because that could cut a couple of different ways. On the one hand, you know, for the vice president of basketball ops, the guy who makes all these personnel decisions, to come out and say specifically about this guy that has, you know, in the past very openly struggled with his confidence as a player, said, hey, this guy needs to step up, this guy needs to play better. That's risky, because Nico could see that and think, oh, the organization doesn't believe in me, the organization is taking shots at me publicly on the radio. But at the same time, you know, this comes a week after the two-game benching, so I feel like Pax saying that on the radio isn't saying anything to Nico that the two-game benching didn't already, you know, get through. And obviously Nico's been playing great since the two games he didn't play. You know, he's come back, he scored in double figures in all those games, he looks like he's shooting more confidently, so maybe the message got through to him. But I thought it was really interesting that Pax made it a point to kind of call out Nico and say, look, this guy needs to be more consistent. And to Nico's credit, again, he has been.
He's in the final year of his contract, he'll be a restricted free agent. And the Bulls need an evaluation on exactly what he is, which I think is part of the reason, in addition to Nico needing to provide offense for him and outside shooting, but that's part of the reason he's been getting like 30, 32, 33 minutes a night. He's been getting more minutes than Taj Gibson these past couple games, partly for matchups, partly because he's playing better. But the Bulls need to see what he's doing. And I read that from Pax as, look, he's got to be a lot better if we're going to bring it back.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's a fair assessment, probably. I still have no idea what Nico's going to be worth on the open market. I don't know if the Bulls have a read yet on other teams might.
This is my guess. I think he's going to get at least 10 a year.
I would probably agree with that, too. The salary cap, $103 million.
Here's the thing. So the offer sheet, I don't know if you've been following this whole Donatas Motiejunas thing, but he got a deal for like $8 million a year from the Nets that Houston ended up matching and then rescinding because of health stuff. The only reason that deal, that number that they got for Motiejunas was as low as it was because of his health issues, which Nico, I mean, except for that appendectomy thing last year, which is an issue that's in the past, he's been pretty healthy. So a guy with theoretically the same skill set as a stretch four who can kind of space out the floor and, you know, give you shooting at the power forward position if he can actually hit shots, which he has been lately, but, you know, he has to be more consistent. But that's the kind of guy I can look at a few teams around the league. You know, Brooklyn is a team that, you know, since they don't have any draft picks, they've had to get creative with some of these offer sheets to try to get guys. So that's a team they just obviously went after Motiejunas. They might throw some money at Nico. New Orleans can look at him and talk themselves into, hey, well, Ryan Anderson played well next to Anthony Davis when he was healthy. Maybe Nico can be our new Ryan Anderson. You know, maybe Washington. I'm just thinking there are teams around the league that I think could use Nico.
When you bring up the Motiejunas comparison, It's a good, very good parallel. That makes me think Nico's going to get more than $10 million, actually. Because
that was just a baseline. I wouldn't be surprised if he's 15.
He has a lot more potential than Mody Yunus does, in my mind, if he can string it together consistently. And again, it only takes one team. But Nico's future, very, very much up in the air with the Bulls. And I think a note to make, too, on Paxson is that, again, he was on the Bulls championship, the first three-peat teams, hit the big shot to beat the Suns in the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
And he is an old-school guy. Like, he's not sitting there poring over analytics for 24 hours a day. You know what I mean? He's a guy who said last year at the end of the season press conference, too, like, speaking to Jimmy Butler, needing to kind of show more leadership and doing it in a better way by carrying yourself and performing on the court and just getting the job done. Like, he goes back to the suck it up and get better idea is a lot of what, like, he believes in. Like, that's right. His inherent first reaction is, like, be more of a man. Be more of a badass basketball
player.
He's old
school.
He's very old school in that regard. And that's the message, I think, that he's been sending Nico with that. I mean, he's publicly doing that through the media in that regard, is what I see there. And that's what Nico has struggled with in saying he gets down on his confidence sometimes. But Nico, he rebounded really well in the win Monday night, I thought, against the Pacers. I think he had 7 boards, but he just battled on the inside and, like, threw his body at people and didn't knock anyone down with his elbows, but seemed more physical in that game. It seemed that in the past few games. And maybe he's getting that message that's coming from above in a way. A couple more notes on the John Paxson interview is that he said he's seen growth from Fred Hoiberg this year in year two, which is notable because he said last year Fred needed to show it at the end of the season. He didn't seem like he was super impressed with the job Fred did in the first year while saying the Bulls still fully supported him. He did note that the most growth he's seen for Fred was on the practice court, which just dovetails with,
which,
like,
coincidentally
themes.
Is the parts that the media can't see.
Yes, that's a very good point.
So in other words, he's coaching them harder.
Maybe. Well, he's given them, we should note that the Bulls had an off day Tuesday when we're recording this podcast before playing the Nets on Wednesday, and he might be coaching them harder, but he's also giving them more rest Wednesday morning because there's
no
Bulls shoot-around. There will be a walkthrough at 4:30 ahead of the game against the Nets that everyone in the organization hopes Nico can get to. You got to insert your Nico Mirotic Bulls walkthrough attendance record jokes in here anytime you can.
Well, they had a walkthrough yesterday, and as far as I know, he went to it.
So it's one game winning
one
streak
and one.
On the walkthrough.
1-1.
Last thing I would say that Pax said that stood out was that he mentioned, quote, at some point this year we may have to give our young guys opportunities that they're going to need to see if they can develop into players. Which was interesting, I thought, because that was, I think in the back of his head, it's like, if this season really goes downhill, let's play the young guys a ton and see what they are and have an evaluation of them in the offseason. That's the big picture look, but in the kind of more at hand here, small picture, it involved the day after he said that, Jaren Grant playing the fourth quarter over Rajon Rondo, the young guy second year over the veteran. So it's like, in the short term and long term here, like, that might be in the view.
So you think maybe that Pax saying that is giving Fred the public endorsement of saying, hey, if you want to bench Rondo in the fourth quarter, if you want to maybe ride with Jaren Grant at MCW now that MCW's back, if you want to do that, you have the organization's support. I wonder if that's what that is.
I mean, I read it, no doubt, that way, is saying that's okay. Pax and Fred talk regularly from everything we see and hear and what they say. I'm sure that has to come up. That's one of the biggest storylines.
Well, yeah,
Bulls
because
this
Rondo,
year, so
Rondo's another,
to come
Rondo
up.
Is another guy that they kind of have to make a decision on because he's next year his contract is $3 million guaranteed. I would imagine if they like what they see out of Jaren and MCW the rest of the season, he probably won't be back. Maybe they'll trade him before the deadline. Maybe some team will see his non-guaranteed deal and say that's, you know, some salary cap relief. We should talk, by the way, about, and we got a question about this also from,
what's the topic here? I got him written down.
From Sam on Twitter.
Sam the Ram said a Ringer article mentioned a trade for Goran Dragic.
This is a piece by Kevin O'Connor over at the Ringer talking about different guys who, you know, big name guys who might get traded before the deadline. Not saying like he's reporting they might get traded, but just guys that would make sense to trade. And Rajon Rondo was one of them. And you know, he it's a good piece. It's worth reading. It we'll tweet it out maybe after we post this podcast. But you know, he talked about how maybe they can try to use it for salary relief and get one of those wings from Portland, like Alan Crabb or something. That's a name that he mentioned.
Will Barton
in Denver is another guy that's kind of out of the rotation, and it just in terms of they have too many guys they have to play right now. That might be something they could do. The Goran Dragic thing, which Kevin brought up in the article, and this listener
asked, "What do you think of that? And what would it take to get?"
Well, I don't know, because Miami's bad. Miami is.
Pat Riley recently went on Miami area radio and said they're going to rebuild, and he apologized to the fans basically and said they'd do it as quickly as possible.
Right, and so I think what that means is they kind of have to trade Dragic, because Dragic is making $15, $16, $17 million a year the next few years, which is not, it's not a ton by the new salary cap standards, but that's still, if you're paying Goran Dragic that much money and you're trying to rebuild, that's maybe not what you want. So, I could definitely see him getting moved, and the Bulls are one of the few teams that needs a point guard the way that, a lot of teams, Goran Dragic maybe wouldn't be an upgrade over just because the point guard position is so deep. So I don't know what it would take. The salaries pretty much match up with Rondo's deal and Dragic's deal, but that's not going to get it. You're going to have to throw in, whether they want, maybe they want Denzel, maybe they want Bobby Portis, maybe they, if they want any of these young guys, they can do that, or they need picks too.
Here's the catch.
What's the catch?
The Heat, just the way Pat Riley, his DNA is to rebuild. He mentioned wants to rebuild as fast as possible. Like, this isn't a 76ers or Chicago Cubs, 5-year plan.
Right.
The Heat, I think, are going to want a piece who can contribute immediately, who's young, or is close to that. I don't think Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine, are nearly close
enough
to that.
So who is? The Bulls don't really have any of those.
Exactly. That's why I don't think a Bulls Heat trade would happen. Like, I like Goran Dragic, the idea of him in Chicago for flipping a first-round pick or a couple picks and matching salaries and one of these young guys, whatever. If you said he's under contract, what, 2 or 3 more years?
3 more.
I think 3 more years. I think that's a decent fit next to Jimmy Butler, too, because Dragic, I mean, he's a guy who plays a lot of pick and roll, but
he doesn't have to have
the ball in his hands 40% of the time.
It should be noted that he and Dwayne Wade didn't exactly fit together great the last couple of years in Miami.
Exactly, but you're looking at it for a one-year overlap for them, most likely.
Right.
But Pat Riley always wants to build through free agency, and I think his idea of a rebuild, most likely, is get some more younger players who are closer, proven to be game-ready already, and then sign that big free agent, if not this summer, the next one, the next whatever it is. And I don't think the Bulls' young players are quite to the caliber that he would want. So that would be my initial reaction.
I would agree.
Trancy on Twitter, and we're on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. Sean's on Twitter, at Heiken. Myself, at Cody Westerlin. But Trancy asks, should the rotation be changed in the fourth quarter for more fresh legs for the Bulls? I personally think the fourth quarter rotation's been fine, and that they've usually been fresh. The one catch would be Jimmy Butler maybe running around and chasing the other team's best perimeter player and then being tired when he carries such a big offensive load and coming in for the last 8:30 or 9 minutes. I can see Jimmy getting tired at times in fourth quarters, and he's, top 5, I think, or top 10 in the NBA in minutes per game, Jimmy Butler. But I don't have a problem with the rotation. Like, Dwayne Wade's usually fresh because he has mid-quarter breaks the last game aside because he played the entire fourth quarter for the first time this year that I can remember. I don't feel like Taj and Nico and Lopez are ever tired because they're shuffling in and out all the time.
Those aren't guys that play a ton of minutes.
I don't think it's, energy that's beating the Bulls up in the fourth quarter outside anyone besides some nights where Jimmy Butler doesn't have quite the same lift. I think it's just execution and personnel.
Right, I think the fourth quarter rotation just kind of is going to be what it is. Obviously, this Rondo thing that we've talked about, if Fred keeps riding Jaren Grant over him, or if that's just a matchup thing, that's going to be worth keeping an eye on. But other than that, I don't really see that changing in any major way.
Yeah, Ryan on Twitter asks, when will the Bulls reach the point where they have no other choice than to blow it up by trading players? I guess that's kind of theme of our podcast, because we have been looking at the big picture approach for the Bulls. I mean, I don't expect this to be blown up. They had a chance at the trade deadline last year to trade Jimmy Butler, and they chose not to, which proved to be
and
the
at
right
the draft,
decision.
And before the draft.
Excuse me, draft.
Well,
yes,
I think
some teams
called about him.
Yeah, so they've had their chances and had that debate on draft night in June. So I don't see it yet either, because Dwayne Wade's still under contract for another year. I'd imagine that's more one more year off.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to do that, gotta think as too. It took the White Sox forever to blow it up in same Reinsdorf ownership.
That's right, and you have to keep in mind that I think as long as Dwayne Wade is here, it's not going to be a rebuild. Because part of the reason why he left Miami, part of it was that he felt disrespected by the money that Pat Riley was offering. But I also just feel like at that point in his career, the idea of a rebuild didn't really appeal to him. And so when the Bulls were able to clear the salary cap space, and part of their pitch was, look, we have Jimmy Butler who's in his prime. We just signed Rajon Rondo who's a veteran who's won championships, etc. We just we got Robin Lopez. We have this veteran group right now. That was part of the appeal to Wade. So I feel like if he's suddenly still on this team and then they decide to completely blow it up and not re-sign Taj, trade Jimmy Butler, trade Robin Lopez, get a bunch of picks, get a bunch of young guys, and you've still got Wade there, I feel like that might kind of annoy him.
Absolutely, and make no mistake about it, he does have some influence here in his time here, because a return to respectability was part of signing Dwayne Wade as well on both ends. He wanted to get the Bulls back to the playoffs, and they felt his professionalism and just pedigree could really help them. And all the signs are, from everything we hear, see, read, everything we read between the lines, is that the Bulls really want to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
They really want to keep making money, get some playoff revenue, all that stuff, all the signs point toward that. So I don't see that rebuild happening in dramatic fashion this year at this trade deadline. That said, I would expect them to try to add at the fringes, depending on where they're at in the playoff race and what the standings are and everything. But what's the last one? Oh, here we go. Number one Bulls fan on Twitter asks, when Doug McDermott comes back, which we expect Wednesday night after he sat out one game with a shin injury, will we see Doug, MCW, Dwayne Wade, Nico, and Chris Felicio together as a lineup? It was really effective to start the season.
I thought so. That's a lineup that we've talked about before on this podcast. It's one that, the first couple of games of the season I thought was pretty good in terms of, it has balance, it has shooting, it has defense, it has, it's not enough of a liability in any one area that you can really say that there's a reason they shouldn't play that. I mean, but they really just haven't had everybody healthy since those first three games of the season, so there's really not enough of a sample size. But yeah, I mean, I could imagine Fred trying that one out. Maybe put Jimmy in there instead of Wade, too, for a little bit more defense. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I fully expect it, because that's been their MO so far, is four bench guys, Dwayne Wade, early in the second quarter, quite a bit, when Jimmy gets his usual breather. So if they keep the same substitution patterns, which I would expect that they'll probably stay in that same range because it's working well even before kind of the departure in the fourth quarter of D-Wade playing the other night so much and not closing out all the earlier quarters quite as much like he usually does. But yeah, I mean, those are their four best guys off the bench. It seems like when they're healthy, I would expect them to play alongside Dwayne Wade. And worth noting too, I mean, the naked eye sees that eye test that it was effective. Fred Hoiberg and his staff, they are really into analytics. Like, they check these things and see the lineups, so they're aware that it worked early in the season. So, yeah, I expect that Wednesday night probably against the Nets, the United Center, a game the Bulls should win. That would get them back to 500.
It would be a problem if they don't win this game.
Yes.
The Nets are bad.
Yep, I got Bulls by 14.
Yeah, you would hope that something like that would be how it shakes out.
Yeah, so we'll have a podcast on Wednesday night after the game at the United Center. I know this one went a little longer than usual. We want to get to that big picture stuff. Some revealing stuff from John Paxson, some stuff to read between the lines. Hopefully we did that a little bit. If you have questions, comments, again, you can always email them to LockedOnBulls@gmail.com or to Twitter @LockedOnBulls. If you have a different take than us reading into those comments, feel free to share it. Always open to new thoughts. And most of all, you can subscribe to us anywhere podcasts are available, basically.
That's right. Go on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, Podbean, anywhere that podcasts exist. Locked On Bulls exists. The rest of the Locked On Podcast Network also exists. Locked On NBA with David Locke. Locked On NFL. Locked On Fantasy Football, Fantasy Basketball. All 30 NBA teams, all 32 NFL teams all have their own show on the Locked On Podcast Network. So whichever one of those teams you're a fan of, make sure you check out their Locked On Podcast. If you want to advertise with us, remember, you can email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Check out The Athletic to read my work. Check out 670thescore.com to read Cody's work. And we will be back with you guys tomorrow night after the Nets game. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.